Hello. So today we've got another episode discussing Vipassana meditation, and as promised in a previous video, I thought I would go through the super mundane paths and fruitions and discuss those for a little bit. Firstly, before we get into it, a massive thank you to everyone who sent a donation to us via our PayPal giving account. PayPal do this thing where you send money to us via them, they keep it for the month. Obviously they go and invest it or do whatever they want to do with it, and then at the end of the month they send on the entire amount to the charity that it was designed to go towards. Seems a relatively okay way of doing business. We're not charged anything for it, you're not charged anything for it, the money gets to us eventually. So we had a very pleasant surprise at the beginning of December when we got some money through from the PayPal giving account. So thank you, big thank you to everyone who supported us in that way. Glad that everyone's enjoying these videos. Apologies that I hadn't put one up for a few weeks. Just got a bit busy and, you know, got to be inspired to do these things. So had a little break from it. Back now. Another point of business, just before we get into it. I was asked in a comment whether we would put these YouTube audio up on our House of Inner Tranquility podcast, which we're going to do from January onwards. So in the box below, you'll find a link to our Audio Boom podcast account, and you can listen to our podcast on that. You can listen to it via our website. We're also on on Spotify and on iTunes as well. So in the fullness of time, all these Vipassana and Paticcasamuppada videos will be turned into audio and will be going up on our podcast. So look out for those from January onwards. We will also be starting, hopefully, if we get our act together, we've decided to start a podcast discussion as well. So I'll have a chat with members of the community, students here, as a way of just help to get the information out in another way to you. So that will be available on the podcasts, and we'll be endeavouring to be consistent in putting podcasts up every Friday. And I'll be a little less consistent with putting up YouTube videos, but I will continue to put up YouTube videos on Mondays or whenever they're ready. A little bit more inconsistent, sorry about that. But the feedback I've got is that people are really enjoying them, and they're proving to be very helpful to people, so I will continue to offer them up for you. Okay, so in this episode, I wanted to talk to you about supramundane path and fruition, which is, I think, the most mystical, strange, unusual aspect of this spiritual teaching, Buddha's teaching, probably along with jhanas on the samatha side. But when it comes to Vipassana meditation, what we're aiming for at the end of each path, and if you remember in the last episode, I think I was talking about there being four different paths: path of stream winning, path of once returner, path of non-returner, path of arahant. At the conclusion of all those four insight paths, there is what's known as the supramundane path and fruition. And so all the noting of conditioned and conditioning phenomena, the noting of aggregates, the deepening apprehension and comprehension of the true characteristics of ultimate phenomena, that is, that they are transient, unsatisfactory, ungraspable, and entirely not self, conditioned and conditioning. All of that process of noting is bringing us to the denouement, the conclusion, which is the supramundane path and fruition. So we need to define our terms a little bit. So supramundane means that which is above or beyond the mundane. So included in our definition of mundane are aggregates. The observation of aggregates of ultimate experience, so that's just to reiterate, materiality, feeling, perception, mental formations, and consciousness, in all their manifestations, observing them arising and passing away, that still qualifies as mundane wisdom. So recognizing the transient, unsatisfactory, and selfless nature of ultimate phenomena, it still belongs to the mundane way of describing the world. Although it's at the ultimate level rather than the conventional level. Please refer to previous videos for details about that. In distinction to that, supramundane, therefore, is that which lies beyond conditions. And there is no real way of talking about it because whatever we talk about in relation to that which lies beyond conditions, we're applying mundane terminology descriptions to describe that which is beyond description. So instead, what the Buddha did was formulate this path whereby somebody, through the keen observation of the true nature of existence at the ultimate level, noting, generating insight wisdom into those three characteristics, reaches a point at the end of each of these four insight paths when their insight knowledge becomes so keen, so thorough, so precise that you can say that their understanding of the conditioned and conditioning universe comes into conformity with the way life really is. So there's this coming into the harmonious balance between what we might call one's perception of the world and the way the world really is at the ultimate level. So it's coming into harmony. And that's called in the books, that's called knowledge of conformity. That's an insight knowledge. There is a whole path that you have to take to reach this point, and we have to emphasize at all times with insight meditation, it's not an intellectual appreciation. Your intellectual map of ultimate reality can be formed really quite quickly. This is the direct apprehension and comprehension of formations as being entirely transient, unsatisfactory, and non-self. It's a different order of knowledge, a different order of knowing. And what all that work has done has brought you to the point where there is this spontaneous letting go of the mind's obsession with the occurrence of phenomena. So up until this point, there's been this observation of ultimate phenomena. So we've been obsessed with the world, the conventional world, trying to get relationships right, trying to get career right, trying to find that lasting satisfaction through manipulating the world. We got to the point where we go, no, nothing I try is going to work. It always ends, whatever it is. I'm always left then having to find another avenue to find that lasting fulfillment. So we've gone, all right, let's try the Buddha's teaching. We get into the higher teaching, we start practicing insight meditation, we go through all these insight knowledges. All of that is obsession with the occurrence of things. All the way up to knowledge of conformity, that is still obsession with the occurrence of phenomena, of the conditioned and conditioning universe. It's just obsession with it, still obsessed with it. But because of all the insight knowledge that's been accrued, there comes this point where there is this higher order of understanding of the inability for that which arises and passes away, that which is ungraspable, that which is not self, to provide that lasting happiness and security that we seek. And so there is this letting go. It's a spontaneous, you can't think your way there, you can't manipulate it into being. Well, actually, you'd say insight knowledge, the acquisition of insight knowledge is the manipulation that leads to this letting go. And so it is a spontaneous event where the meditator is noting, 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 noting. The mind comes into conformity, or the perception of the three marks comes into conformity with the way reality actually is. So there's this perfect harmony. The noting continues, and there is this point at which the mind just simply lets go of its obsession with the occurrence of phenomena and alights on that which neither arises nor passes away. That is the unconditioned element. That is nirvana. And there is, therefore, this moment, what we call the moment of stream entry, where the mind has lost its obsession with the occurrence of phenomena. It alights on that which neither arises nor passes away. And that is what's called the supramundane path, where consciousness takes the unconditioned element as object, right? Then remember that consciousness is a continuum, arising and passing away, moments of consciousness taking an object, moments of consciousness taking an object over again and again and again and again and again. So there is a moment of where consciousness takes nirvana as object, then there is the result of that which arises in succession, which is the fruition moment. So you have the path moment, and that's followed by the fruition moment, which is the equivalent of the path moment, but is the result of it. So it takes nirvana as object, but it's the resultant of the prior path moment. And then there is subsidence back into the ordinary stream of consciousness. So then consciousness just goes back to noting things. So it's just like that. So quick. So quick. Well, there's so much we can talk about this. So that was the whole reason of walking the stream winning path, was to reach the supramundane path of stream winning, and then to have the stream winning fruition, and then the mind then reverts back into ordinary states of consciousness, taking ultimate noting ultimates again. Now there's so much we can talk about this. It is a fundamental life changer, goes without saying. It's called stream winning. The first version is called stream winning because the successful meditator who's reached this point has won to the stream of consciousness that leads to full enlightenment. And in no more than seven more lifetimes, if no further work is done. So it is absolutely momentous. So it's that the whole stream of consciousness has now been moved, and it's now going in a different direction. It's going towards the realization of full enlightenment. And from that point, nobody can fall back to their state prior to that. So someone who has won to the stream is guaranteed to become enlightened in no more than seven lifetimes if they do no further work, and they can't fall into rebirths lower than human. So you are free forever from the threat of what the Buddha called the downfall, the woeful way. So that is deeply profound. Now, the vast, vast majority of people, that happens because they have undertaken a formal training such as the Buddha's higher teaching, Vipassana meditation. Occasionally you find, you do come across somebody who perhaps has become a stream winner without having gone through that formal, consciously applying themselves to a formal training such as Vipassana. But in the 99.99 recurring percent, you have to do the necessary work. Occasionally you find people that appear to have become fully enlightened without having done any work. They're just walking along one day, or taking their dog for a walk, and then something's happened and they've just realised emptiness, they've realised non-duality, however you want to describe it, fully, and they don't know how to do it. And sometimes I think personally what's happened is they've done a lot of work in a past life, they've come into this existence already a stream winner. They didn't have more than seven lifetimes to realise the cessation of suffering, and they're just walking along, taking their dog for a walk one day, and it just happens. That I can understand, and that's why you get, it seems to me anyway, that's why you get teachers who say, oh, there's nothing you can do, it just happens, you know, just, it's, you know. I suspect that that's what happens in that case, but obviously I don't know for sure. But based on my experience, that seems to be, that would account for it. So anyway, so it's momentous. It really is moving the river. It really is changing the course of life from whichever way it was going to full enlightenment as the ultimate destination. So, yeah. So, and another aspect of these path, super mundane path and fruition, which is subject to some variance depending on the teacher, it certainly appears to, as far as I can see, it appears to be that the path and fruition has the jhana factors attached to them. So on the stream winning path, it appears as though there is jhana level strength of concentration. So on the first path, it means that there is initial and sustained application of mind, happiness, rapture, and one-pointedness of mind. Those faculties being states of mind being extraordinarily mature and strong. On the second path, it appears is that it follows the jhanas in that the initial and sustained application are missing, the other three components are there. So it seems as though there is jhana level strength going through all four fruitions, stream winning, once returner, non-returner, and arahant. Which then becomes really interesting because it seems that not every meditator actually remembers becoming a stream winner. Many do. For many, it's like just the most momentous occasion of their life, and it's just absolutely burned in. But with other people, it seems they just don't seem to notice. And as a teacher, you've kind of followed them along the insight path. You know where they are. You know they're approaching this knowledge of conformity. And you know their insights are getting strong, their jhana factors are getting strong, everything, the whole practice is maturing beautifully. And one of the telltale signs that someone has actually been through the fruition is not that they're like, ah, and all of this. It is actually that they come in and tell you how awful their meditation has now become. Because what's happened is that they've reached this peak of insight knowledge that has thrown the switch momentarily. They've experienced the fruition, the path and supramundane path and fruition. The mind has come back into ordinary states of consciousness. And now when they return their attention to paying attention again, they find that they've got none of the power, none of the subtlety, none of the skill. It's like the concentration's weak. It's difficult to turn the mind to observing these objects arise and pass away. All the insight seems to have disappeared. And so that can be very concerning for them. And they wonder what on earth's caused this. And so that's one of the telltale signs that someone has actually passed through the fruition. Again, I would caution against anyone making claims, fooling themselves into think. If you think you're a stream winner, you're not. Unless you really, really are. Now, there are certain ways the Buddha said you can tell whether you are a stream winner. You have perfect faith and confidence, because after stream winning, the faculties become powers. So faith becomes confidence. And it's confidence because the mind, whether you remember the actual discrete occasion or not, the mind has actually seen what lies beyond conditions. So it has this incredible confidence in the Buddha, the teaching, and the Sangha. Also, there is the rising of the faculty, which wasn't there before, the faculty of mind, which is the knowledge that I shall come to know the unknown. I shall come to full realization of the truth of things as they really are. And that is a paradigm shift in comprehension, in understanding, in the power of the individual. There is an assurance, I shall come to know the unknown. That's what that faculty is. That only arises after stream winning. The faculties themselves, faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, investigation, then become powers. So there is a dramatic shift for the meditator. But what you won't get are any residuum of those first three fetters of which I've spoken in previous episodes. So attachment to personality belief, rule and ritual, attachment to rule and ritual, and skeptical doubt have all gone completely. And people get confused that one of the personas that they try to create for themselves is that of being a stream winner. And that's really dangerous, because actually that is the fetter of personality belief writ large. But of course, the person won't look at it, because if they look at it, then they'll know they're not stream winners. And unfortunately, I've seen students get into that mess, and worse. I've had meditators who claim that they're enlightened, although they won't actually put it, they won't actually tell you that that's what they think. Slippery as fish, some people. But the problem is, that is actually the operation of the fetter of personality belief, trying to acquire this persona as being this person. Now, a true stream winner, that's all. They won't be trying to fool you anymore. They won't be trying to put on airs and graces anymore. They won't be trying to enforce a persona and get you to see them in that way. All of that will have gone. There'll be no further deep-rooted belief in religion, politics, philosophy as a way to resolve the problem of suffering. All of that will be gone. Now, that's not to say that they won't necessarily have political opinions. They may very well do, but they certainly don't believe anymore that politics can resolve the problem of suffering, because whether they're clearly comprehending of what's happened, they have actually discovered what does lead to the cessation of suffering, and it's nothing external. So all of that will have gone. However, when they turn their attentions to observing the arising and passing away of things again, it will feel rough, it will feel difficult. There's one of two things that can occur, or yeah, there's one or two ways of moving forward from this point. The first is that you can never experience the super mundane path of stream winning again, but you can, if you work up the insight knowledge is in a certain way, you can revisit the fruition as a meditative attainment. So, yeah, so what you're essentially doing is reworking the path of stream winning, going through the insight knowledges and then re-experiencing the fruition of stream winning. However, that's not taking you forward, that's just going back over ground already trod. What you have to do is rework the insight knowledges, but now on the second path, the path of once return. And so it feels rough and gross and hard. It's difficult to, compared with the subtlety and strength of the noting on the conclusion of the first path, at the beginning of the second path, it really feels very difficult. So you just have to rework it from basics. You just go back to, essentially, you go back to developing knowledge of arising and passing away, and then continue on from there. And instead of being confronted with the fetters of personality, belief, attachment to rule and ritual, and skeptical doubt, now you are faced with the fetter of gross greed and gross hatred. And this can, this is one of the things that foxes people that have become stream winner, that because they've got rid of this superficial, this first layer of fetters, that's given the room for these underlying fetters, the fetters of greed and hatred, to arise. And greed and hatred are so deeply rooted in our being that it takes two whole paths of insight knowledge to deal with them. So you deal with the gross first, and then you deal with the gross, with the subtle on the third path. And, well, I for one found dealing with the fetters on of gross greed and hatred incredibly hard and incredibly difficult. I just felt like I was just like a really awful person. I just had all this terrible stuff coming up, and oh, you can't turn your eyes away from it. And part of the problem is that that stream winning fruition, it's changed the way you see the world. You know that there is this otherness now, this other way of seeing it. But now it's like you finally got your head out of the sewer, and you're able to look about and go, oh, it's beautiful. And then you find that your head's back in the sewer again, even deeper into the sewer this time. And it's like, oh, this is disgusting. And then there are times when you come out of it and you go, oh, it's beautiful, life's amazing. And then you're back in it and you're back out of it. And it can be very, very difficult and very trying. It certainly was for me. So, again, that's why it really, really helps to have a knowledgeable teacher, someone who knows what they're talking about, who can reassure the student that it's fine, you're now dealing with the fetters of gross greed and gross hatred. Carry on. Apply yourself in the way that you applied yourself to the first path, and gradually over time, again, the insight path of once returning will just, you know, the insights will come, start coming. You'll start, but now you're looking at things from a slightly different angle. You're looking from slightly different perspectives. Certain characteristics will be seen more than on the first path. Others will be seen less. You're seeing the field of formations from new angles, and eventually, again, you'll come to that knowledge of conformity where your insight conforms with reality, And then that will herald the supramundane path and fruition of once returning. And it moves forward from there. So these are monumental, incredible. Just to think that in any one continuum, in the whole of timeless arising and passing away of consciousness, that moment of consciousness, which is the supramundane path of stream winning, will only occur once, for one finger snap, and it'll be gone, and it'll never repeat. The fruition will repeat, but the actual path moment, it arises once in any one continuum and then ceases completely. It's astonishing. And the same with once returning, non-returning, and Arahant. So those four paths only occur once in any one continuum. It's astonishing. It really is an amazing, the insight path is just so amazing, and amazingly powerful. But yeah, I hope that whets your appetite. I hope that fills you with the desire to practice and the yearning to discover this and go through this within your own continuum, if I can put it like that. And just be wary of applying labels and making assumptions about where you are. Good piece of advice, wherever you think you are on the path, halve that estimation and halve it again, and then you might be getting somewhere approximate. Because, like I say, the danger is that people come to believe that they've been through these fruitions when they haven't, and that really stymies the whole thing and makes the whole thing very difficult and very unmanageable. So, with that caveat, with that warning in place, nonetheless, I wish you well, and I hope that, very much hope, that you fulfill your heart's desire.